Well, hello everyone. I'm your host, Cindy Ketzel. Thanks for joining us for this episode of 9 to Thrive HR. In this podcast, we team up with experts to bring you the best in HR, talent management, and business strategy. As you know, I do always love to hear from you. So if you do have a specific topic or a guest that you would like to hear being interviewed, please send us an email at podcasts@hci.org. You all, I'm so excited. This is the second time we have had a fellow HCI person on our podcast, although that's not what we're going to be focusing on today, but I'm so excited to introduce you to Christina Costa. Christina is the founder of Christina Costa Coaching, and as just a funny little side note, when Christina and I first met, I had noticed her cool logo that she'd had, and when it was designed, she told me she wasn't real sure about it at first, but she loves it, and it's so cool. I loved it. It embodies her, and it's just a really simple way to display Christina Costa Coaching. So, Christina, welcome. Tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are. We're so excited to have you on.
Thank you so much for that awesome introduction. I'm glad that you like my logo. You I put a lot I of effort it. Into it. It did take a couple of months to get it right.
I know it did. And you're the one who's inspired me. I still have to work on mine. And I
if you need a designer, I got a great one. So let me know. But I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me to speak. I want to share a little bit about my journey because it's been a very unconventional one to the path of HR and being in this human resources, people development, talent development space. So I actually graduated from Boston College with a degree in marketing communications and Latin American studies. Had no idea what I wanted to do with my life yet. And I graduated in a time when there was a recession, really bad recession, 2009 specifically, and there were no jobs. So I ended up actually living and working abroad. I decided, you know what, there are no jobs here. I'm going to go get a job in another country. And so I actually was a teacher for 3 years abroad, 2 years in Japan, 1 year in Spain, traveling the world, teaching, meeting high school students, and teaching all types of classes. I taught debate class, oral, pronunciation, writing, you name it. I taught all types of courses, and I got to travel all over the world. So I like to share that part of my story because I do think that my travels and the diversity I saw all over the world and how other people live and how other people, you know, do business and work really has impacted the way that I think about work and what it could look like and what an inclusive culture is. And so from there, I came back to the States, decided to get a job at a university so I could go to school for free. I was always very aware of that. And so I was an international student advisor at Northeastern University for a bit, where I learned all about visas, you know, H-1Bs and sponsorships and what international people have to go through to even become citizens, right? Or even get sponsored for work and all of that kind of back-end stuff that we don't really think about. And then during that time, I actually got introduced to the technology sector. So all of my students, my work study students, they were all engineers and they were all going to go get jobs at Google and LinkedIn and all these big name companies. And they were telling me, oh, this place looks awesome. I'm getting $150,000 to start, you know, as their starting offer. And I was like, what? I need to go into tech. And that was actually my transition into technology. So I made a transition into PayPal, was actually my first job. And I was in advertising operations. So again, still figuring out my path, but realizing when I joined PayPal that I was the only Latina woman at the entire organization in Boston. And I was like, wow, there's no diversity. It's like, people don't even know about this. Transitioning from PayPal, I ended up at HubSpot. And HubSpot at the time was like the it company to work at in Massachusetts or in Cambridge. And I was a customer success manager there. And I worked a lot with their LATAM customers. And I realized at that point as well, there was no diversity. There really was probably 800 employees, maybe 80 people of color at the company. And I realized that the reason there wasn't was because a lot of Black and brown communities just didn't know about tech. And so I realized that, wow, like the only reason I even know about this world is because of you know, an exposure that I have to people from other countries. And I'm like, this is really fascinating. And so one of my missions while I was at HubSpot was to try to bridge that gap. I wanted to be the person who opened up that doorway for others and shared this information in our communities. And one way to do that was actually by starting an employee resource group within the organization, because there wasn't one. From HubSpot, I ended up working at a startup after that, a 12-person startup, to be exact. I was a digital marketing manager there, but I was also HR. I was also recruitment. I was, you know,
because there's 12 people.
Exactly. Yeah. When you work in a company of that size, you wear every hat, creating some of the HR processes, like what is onboarding going to look like, you know, creating documentations for marketing, right? It's like systems and processes. I realized that I actually did enjoy the people side of it, the talent side of it. And then from there, ended up actually working in learning and development after that, because I realized that, okay, I love working with people, but I also like teaching, educating, and curriculum. And that in a role at a tech company is really like the learning and development space. Meanwhile, and this is kind of on the side, I also co-founded an organization in Boston called Women with Purpose, which was essentially professional development trainings and workshops for professional women of color. And the reason I was really passionate about that was because I was seeing, you know, just statistically that women of color are the most underpaid in this country. And a lot of it had to do with, you know, not having access to information like financial literacy, like how to start your own business, like how to start an employee resource group at your company, how to advocate for yourself or negotiate, right? Like all these things that we don't really learn. And I decided I wanted to teach those things. I'm like, these are life skills that we never really are taught. And it was something that I was very passionate about. So that was my passion project, was Women with Purpose, curating these spaces, creating these curriculums, and really bringing on leaders. I would actually source and find women who were leaders, either CEOs or founders or VPs, to come and teach these classes. It was amazing. So that's where my love for coaching, teaching, upskilling, reskilling, like all those kinds of things,
That's really
where it showed up for me. And creating inclusive spaces, right? Because I was very intentional with the group that I didn't want it to just be Black only or Latina only or Asian only. Like I wanted it to be any woman who has ever felt marginalized was welcome, or any woman who felt that they didn't have a voice or seat at the table was welcome. So it was really, really diverse. So from there, I mean, I went on to have a variety of different roles in tech. I was at one point program manager of a career training program for job seeking software engineers. So I led that for about 2 years. And I was also head of learning and development at that company. And there I coached about 500 engineers through the job search process and emotional intelligence and all that kind of stuff. And that's really where I started learning even more about the importance of empathy and connection and emotional intelligence, and how that is actually what really makes you stand out as an applicant, as a candidate, rather than, do you know all the code? Like, people really want to know, are you a team player? Are you collaborative? Are you able to communicate effectively? Are you able to take direction or be innovative, right? Like, these are the skills we're taught to be soft skills that I actually call the power skills. And so leading that, and then most recently working as a recruiter at Google, was kind of the last full-time role that I've had. And that was because I really wanted to learn what's going on at these big tech firms. You know, what is happening under the hood? How are people getting assessed for talent? And how are people being found and interviewed and all that? And so I accepted a role as a recruiter at Google because I wanted to really understand the process. So it was really interesting. I learned a lot. All that to say, I went on to going full-time in my coaching business. So I am, like you mentioned, I'm a career coach. I'm also an HR consultant and trainer, specifically specializing in diversity, equity, and inclusion. I like to call it inclusivity training. So like team trainings, team building, also strategic talent acquisition, right? So anything having to do with the talent and recruitment process, how to make it more equitable, because I did see a lot of inequities in the recruitment process. A lot of amazing candidates overlooked because of, you know, small details like the name of the company they work at. It's really about, you know, are we hiring for brand name or are we hiring for skill set and ability? I've probably coached at this point over 2,000 job seekers. I mean, I've coached so many, and because I used to do a lot of group coaching programs, I ran a lot of nonprofits as well. So I've coached a lot of underrepresented talent, and I will say some of the most talented individuals come from maybe some of the roughest backgrounds. And they are the ones that are the most resilient, the most hardworking, the most innovative. They are the ones that will figure it out. And those are the kinds of people you want to hire. You want to hire those people who don't need, you know, to be handheld the whole time. Those people who can take lead and charge on things. Those people who can be innovative and resilient and stop at nothing to get the results, right? So HCI, I actually ended up here, funny enough, because I spoke at one of their conferences and I gave, I guess, a very good presentation around equitable recruitment practices. So much so, they invited me to come be a facilitator, and I have really enjoyed my experience so far. So that's my story, I guess.
I love it. Well, and I'm always a fan, and we'll wrap our conversation up with a question about, since of course we are with HCI together, I will wrap our conversation up before we head out around that. But yeah, I'm always fascinated with guests who have kind of a squiggly, I always call it the squiggly line, right? Because I think that's, you know, probably when I was moving through post high school, college, and I waited a while to go back to graduate school. And in my path, that was kind of the societal kind of expectations, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? So I'm always appreciative. I think we embrace that more today, kind of that squiggly line of how we've gotten where we are today. So I'm always admire that, because I think you gave a great rendition of it, just your experiences along the way that catapulted you into this position to be a subject matter expert on what you're doing. So
it's funny, one of my many jobs that I have now, I also lead a online career community of career transitioners, and we actually call it the career journey. It's a journey. It's not a straight line.
It is a journey. I mean, seriously, and I'm grateful that, you know, my nieces and nephews are growing up in this environment where, you know, my sister knew early on what she wanted to do. She went for it. She's amazing. She's well-renowned in what she's doing, you know, but I'm so grateful that my nieces and nephews, this is what they're exposed to now, right? Is this kind of figuring out where your passion is. Because, you know, I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but when you're passionate about what you do, it doesn't feel like you're working.
Exactly. So, I'm just curious, what does your sister do?
So she's actually in New York. She's at John Jay. She has been in the field of criminal justice.
Oh, wow.
At least 20 some years. And she travels all around the world assessing prison systems. Which is very amazing.
Very cool.
Yep. She's done some interviewing for folks who maybe are sitting in prison, perhaps wrongfully accused. Wow. Like, she's done some work there too. So she's just gotten deeper and deeper into her craft, whereas I've started as a social worker, right? And then I was like, ooh, I like community development. Ooh, I like personal development. Ooh, you know, like, I kind of like just kind of started.
People know early on, you know?
I know. And so
I don't know if I wish.
No, you don't. No. The value of who you are is in that story you just told. You know what I mean? You know, there's different paths to getting there. Our journeys, like you said. So it's our journeys. But with that, I was thinking about this when you and I were talking about some different topics. And you mentioned in your intro about employee resource group. And I know probably a good majority of our listeners, this is probably a common household terminology now, but can you, since this is what we're going to be talking about for the next few minutes or so, can you tell us a little bit about how do you define, what is an ERG to a company? What does that mean?
Yeah, I'm happy to define that. I don't think it's common terminology. I think a lot of people
in our world it is probably because we're around it.
When I meet other people, I'm like, yeah, ERGs. They're like, what's that?
Okay, well, good. I'm glad I'm asking.
So ERG is an employee resource group, for those who don't know. And essentially what it is an internal community of employees that have some type of shared identity or interest, and they form sort of a community group within the organization to either advocate for that particular identity or interest, or kind of create a safe space for people who identify with those identities. So I really think of an ERG as an internal kind of community of folks who are allies and who want to create an inclusive and psychologically safe space for the most part underrepresented people.
Yeah. And does it serve to provide education also and awareness? Is that?
Yeah, definitely. So I think what I love about employee resource groups are it can serve many functions, right? It can
serve yeah.
a safe space for people to maybe talk about issues that they're feeling or maybe venting. Yep. It could serve as a way to educate the community as well as allies, right? I think one thing people need to realize is, you know, let's say there's a Black ERG, you don't have to be Black to be a part of it. Right. And I think that's where a lot of people get confused. They're like, oh, that's only for Black people. And no, it's for Black people and anyone who supports Black people. And it can educate. It can definitely create, you know, events, right? Different types of events to celebrate maybe Juneteenth or celebrate Martin Luther King Day or whatever, you know, maybe happening within that community. It's a great way to also unify and bring people together and talking about issues in our country that maybe aren't really addressed in the workplace. And that's really where it arose for me, especially when I was at HubSpot, because I actually co-founded it with two other people. The reason that we co-founded and this came to be was because it was actually around the time of Trayvon Martin, of that case. And no one was really talking about it. And it was something that was very much a huge issue in the Black community. And, you know, when George Zimmerman, I believe he got off and he was not convicted, that was a huge blow, right, to the Black and Brown community. And the company wasn't saying anything about it. And it was just silent. And what people need to realize, especially allies, is, you know, your silence might not be painful or hurtful, but it's complicit. It's showing that, you know, you don't see anything wrong with anything, right? And so me and a few colleagues just felt that it needed to be addressed and that something should have been said from the leadership or something about this situation. Because it was heavy on people's minds. Like, everyone was talking about it. I don't know if you remember that, but it was it was kind of like the back in the day George Floyd situation, right? Yep. So we ended up writing a pretty long email about how we were feeling about this to the chief people officer and to the CEO as well. And we told them we wanted to really create a space for us to be able to talk about these things. And so they actually gave us the blessing and they were like, well, we think you guys should. And so we started really with just lunch and learns. That's how it started. Very grassroots. We would just meet once a week. We had a room and we would call it just like allies and friends could come. We ended up calling it POCA, the people of color at HubSpot. And it was anyone who identified as a person of color. And of course, any allies that wanted to join. So really it just started with us talking about the Trayvon Martin situation. And then kind of just talking about systemic racism in general and how, you know, we were feeling about it and really educating people about what is going on, especially if they're not in that world, right? They don't have to think about it, but it's something that can be a very eye-opening conversation. So that's really where it started. And then we did get funding, turned it into an official employee resource group. It actually was the first one at HubSpot. And a year later, it actually ended up opening up a culture program manager role, which it did catapult a lot of change within HubSpot just from that.
Do you think that they, ERGs, are still kind of getting their start as informal? Or do you think that now that the language is out there, because I had just said, you know, some people may not know, and I guess I'm making an assumption that they are more prevalent than perhaps they could be. Are you getting a sense of one way or another of how they are coming to be nowadays?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it depends on the level of, I guess I would say, growth of the organization or just size of the organization. I think larger organizations, you know, like the Googles of the world, the HubSpots of the world, like Salesforce, like all these huge organizations for the most part have already established employee resource groups just because a lot of these bigger companies can, you know, they have the budget for a diversity, equity, and inclusion role or even a whole department dedicated to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Now, smaller organizations, even medium size, it really runs the gamut. It really, I would say, depends on leadership. If leadership believes that diversity and inclusion is important, then employee resource groups are going to exist. If leadership doesn't believe it's important or doesn't see it as a priority, then they most likely will not exist. Or if they do exist within an organization, it's a very grassroots level. So maybe people just meeting once a week, kind of like the lunch and learns, but not having an actual budget behind it. So I guess I'm of the belief, like, put your money where your mouth is, right? If you supposedly care about diversity and inclusion and you see that it's something that maybe you're struggling with, then you should have a budget for people to run employee resource groups. And actually, in my opinion, and this is something that I've actually coached a lot of my clients on, if your employee is taking on a leadership role for an employee resource group, they should be compensated.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, big subject, because it's a lot of work. It is a lot of additional work to be putting together events and bringing people together and having agendas. And, you know, if you want to do events, like getting all of the different pieces together, I mean, that's a lot of coordinating. That's a lot of delegating tasks, right? And so in my opinion, I just feel if you're going to ask people of color to create these inclusive spaces for other people of color, then that's something that...
How do we compensate for that?
Exactly. Because it's time. Time is energy. You know, time is money.
Yeah, that's really interesting. But yeah, so in our HRBP class, we do have this matrix and we talk about in the class DEI and B, but you're right, it is kind of all over the board. You know, what we hope to happen, right, is somebody in the group does have a formal ERG and then the others get to kind of pick their brain and how did you get it started? What did you do? You know, all of those grassroots questions. So now that you say that, you're right. I do think we're on either side of the coin here that some organizations have been able to move forward with them. And hopefully others, it's just in their landscape and it just hasn't come to be just yet.
Yeah, definitely. I think at the end of the day, though, all of it still started from people internally kind of putting together these groups. And I think it's actually funny. I feel like it kind of serves as a metaphor, I think, for the larger society. I think everything's grassroots, right?
That's true.
People coming together and advocating and fighting for something together. And that's really the only way to make real change is by coming together and building community.
Yep, you're not wrong. It's so interesting. I'm thinking about this. So before I took my inaugural job as a social worker, my very first job out of college, I was in customer service. And we started the Hearts and Flowers Committee. And it was basically like recognizing when people were going through hardships or when people were celebrating events or, you know, like things in their lives. It was interesting. And you're right, it was kind of grassroots. And, you know, today that's the stuff that's just like teamwork and collaboration and knowing your partners and all of that stuff. But you're right. That's kind of how we got it going just the same. Well, that's what I wanted to ask you though. I mean, because you do get to have a lot of conversations with folks and you're coaching folks, what tips might you have since we do predominantly have an HR audience, maybe folks from those organizations that are smaller or it's on their mind or it's a plan, right? But it keeps getting moved to the bottom. Any tips that you might have, you know, for those companies who are working to establish maybe their first ERG?
Yeah, I would say first things first. I mean, as an HR professional, your role is to support your people. You know, I've heard a lot from the talent side, right? Like I said, I worked with a lot of clients who are job seeking, maybe unhappy in their roles. And a lot of times they feel as though HR is not protecting them, but rather protecting the company. So it's something that as an HR professional, you are straddling that line, right? Because you are protecting the employee, but you're also protecting the organization. But I will say this, as someone who has worked with hundreds of Black and Brown professionals, if you create a more inclusive, psychologically safe space for people to be themselves, to show up authentically, to have some autonomy over their work-life balance, to have that trust, they will in turn be so productive, so much more engaged in the workplace and so much more willing to share innovative ideas and come up with solutions and really, you know, give it 100% because people want to do that, right? But a lot of places don't feel safe to do so. So I would say, first and foremost, as an HR professional, you should always be assessing the health of your organization. So, you know, sending out NPS surveys, making sure that you're seeing, you know, understanding if people are leaving, if you're noticing trends, like you should be having exit surveys, understanding why are people leaving. And then if you're seeing that it's an issue, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's somebody feels like they're discriminated against or there's, you know, a lot of racial incidents, something needs to change here, right? Either a budget needs to be made for an employee resource group to get started. But I always encourage HR professionals to seek out maybe people that they see kind of leading the charge. Usually always an employee or two, someone who's the outspoken person, someone who is the one kind of bringing this up, but allowing them to decide if they want to take on that role, right? And so that's a big piece there too. It's like, it's a big responsibility to take on an employee resource group. Which is why I say if you do it, you should be compensated for it because it's not easy work and it's not just a simple email that you send and that's it. And so it's really empowering the employee and like seeing who wants to step up to this plate. And if you do step up, you know, what are the goals behind the employee resource group? Is it to retain talent? Is it to create a policy for if some racial incident happens? I've actually seen several companies that have that. They actually have a process for racial incidents. And I think that's really important to address that this happens, right? I think that's another thing people try to, you know, sugarcoat it or be like, oh, it's not, you know, a racial thing. And a lot of times it can be. But if people don't feel safe to bring that up or to share, you know, maybe they're feeling discriminated against or anything like that, then if they don't feel safe, they're going to leave. And that's what I've been seeing. So I would say for HR professionals, you know, check the pulse of your teams, always checking the health of the organization. That's your role as an HR professional to do so. And then also empowering the people who want to step up into this kind of role and empowering them by giving them the space and the budget, right? And that support, because support is not just moral support, it's also financial support, right? And so how are we, you know, empowering these ERGs to be able to do the things that they want to do? Because at the end of the day, the goal, overarching goal of employee resource groups is to create inclusion so that you retain your talent, retain and hopefully promote and empower them. That's the overarching goal, right? But it's not as like a performative, oh, you know, this looks nice on our website, right?
That's right. Yeah. So like walk the walk, yeah. I guess is the, yeah. You know, that's what my next question was going to be, is how you see ERGs changing the landscape. And I think that last comment there you made about what really ultimately, right, is to creating an inclusive environment and hopefully leadership opportunities. And I mean, there's so many skills that you get. So would you say anything further about that? If I were to ask the question, how do you think it's changing the landscape?
Yeah, I'll speak from experience. Well, definitely at HubSpot, for example, as I mentioned, like creating that ERG, literally a year later, they opened up the first culture program manager role. And now HubSpot has a whole like diversity, equity, and inclusion department, right? And so all of that started from this employee resource group movement, right? Of like internally people, employees saying, hey, we want this, right? We want this safe space. We want to feel included. We want to work somewhere that makes us feel included and that invests into us feeling included. And so really that's what people look at. And I'll tell everyone here right now, almost, I would say 99% of my clients, who again are Black and brown professionals, very capable people, mid-level to, you know, very high-level professionals, that's one of the first things they're looking for in an organization when they're on the job search. They are looking for somewhere that has diversity, equity, and inclusion programming, that prioritizes it. They want to know, you know, they are looking up leaders. They are looking up to see who those leaders are voting for, what those leaders care about, where they're spending their money. They're looking at, I'm telling you, people are digging in as far as wanting to know the corporate social responsibility. Where are they spending their corporate social impact dollars? who are they supporting, right? And people really want workspaces where they can feel safe.
You know, I just had a conversation, you know, about the generations coming into the workforce now. These are also things that if they attended university or certification or vocational, these are things we're talking about now too, versus, right, my generation, we maybe weren't talking about it as much. And employees to organizations, they want to have alignment with the values of the organization overall, way more so than when I was looking for jobs.
Definitely. I agree. I think, you know, especially since the pandemic, people are realizing how much time and energy they spend in the workplace. And they're realizing the impact that a negative workplace has on their mental health and their physical health, honestly. Even when I train teams or HR professionals, it's talking about this mind-body connection and that we are not separate beings. And, you know, we are human and we need to rest and we need to recover and we need to have time to do nothing. And we need to have time to just rejuvenate and feel safe in order to perform at our best. And so a lot of people are feeling the burnout. A lot of people are feeling that they can't take time off and they feel this constant state of anxiety. And for people to think that anxiety doesn't metastasize into other things like high blood pressure, diabetes.
Oh, it totally does.
Completely does. And so people are really, I think now more than ever, very cognizant of that. And so they're looking for places where they'll feel they have autonomy, where they have safety, work-life balance that cares about diversity. ERGs are huge.
It's huge, but it's also a, I don't mean blip. I'm not using the word a blip on the map as a minimizing word. I'm using that as it's part of a bigger landscape. It's part it's a part of a bigger picture to your point of what entry or folks coming in, I shouldn't say entry level, but just folks coming into organizations. Levels. Yeah, all levels. Yeah.
Everyone's looking for this.
Everybody. Yeah.
Employee resource groups is a great way to start, you know, to show some type of commitment. But I think, you know, overall having a diversity and inclusion department is really what solidifies it. And I also am a huge believer that there should be chief diversity and inclusion officers. I think they need to be on a seat at the table at the executive level, because this is not just, oh, this is a nice to have in the company. This is a must have, because, you know, whether we like to admit it or not, the history of this country was not founded on kumbaya, everyone being friends, right? That's not how this country was founded. And so in order to really create that systemic change, we need to give those people a seat at the table, right? And it can't be, oh, you know, we'll get to it when we get to it. If you prioritize this, if this is important, then you'll give it the proper title.
Yeah, I love it. Well, thank you. This is awesome. And of course, before we hop off here, I was sharing with you all at the beginning of our conversation that Christina is a faculty here, among other things, here at HCI. Yay. But I wanted to ask, so I guess, but to speak from that faculty role where you're leading certification classes, what has been a highlight for you of doing that?
Yeah, I would say my favorite part about teaching the classes are the people I get to meet.
Me too.
I have met some really awesome HR professionals, and actually, interestingly enough, some people from other countries. So I would say the people make the classes great. I try my best to make them as fun and engaging as possible, because it's a long, you know, 2 or 3 days.
I know.
On Zoom can be a lot, so I try to make it really fun and engaging, but they always participate, and that for me has been the highlight.
Yeah, well, Christina and I got to sit in on a class together at some point, and I know I really enjoyed your, I always learn from the other faculty too, even though I've been doing it for 5 years, but I'm always looking for, you know, oh, I didn't think about doing it this way. So I was so grateful to be able to sit in with you too. And, you know, there's certain spots that other faculty might stop and have robust conversations, and I'll be like, oh, I never thought to stop there and have that conversation. So I was really appreciative to learn that from you as well.
Yeah. No, it's been great. Yeah,
good.
Love it.
Well, we're so glad to have you, and thank you so much for sharing with us. And, you know, I think one of the things that just fascinated you all with Christina coming on today is the fact that she had co-founded
HubSpot, that ERG as a grassroots initiative early on, 2014?
It was around 2014.
That was kind of an early time for us to be talking about it. So I knew that it would be really cool to have a conversation from your perspective and see the growth and see how we've watched that change over the years. But thank you so much for taking time for us today, Christina.
Of course. Thank you for inviting me. This was an awesome conversation.
Good.
I'm excited to see the next ones that come up.
Yep. Good, good, good. Well, thank you. All right, 9 to Thrive listeners, just that quick reminder, shoot us an email if you'd like to hear from a specific guest or have any ideas for topics. Shoot us an email at podcasts@hci.org. Also, be sure to subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast app. If you happen to be listening on Apple Podcasts, please give us a rating. Your rating certainly helps other professionals and talent-minded people discover our program. For 9 to Thrive HR and all of us here at HCI, we appreciate you for tuning in. Make it a great day, everyone.